Some great stories on the coasttocoastam.com hot stories list. Scientists, for example, levitating small animals with sound. That's an incredible story. And how about the story about Bob Lazar? His company, United Nuclear Company, is selling trace amounts of polonium-210 for $69. I assume he's licensed from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which allows vendors to sell small amounts. The buyers have to receive special permission from the United States government, and Bob Lazar's company is selling it. Bob, of course, attracted national attention when he claimed to have worked on crashed alien spaceships at Area 51. We're going to try to get a hold of Bob and talk about this. You know, it is polonium-210 that apparently killed that former Russian spy and might even have knocked into unconsciousness the former prime minister of Russia. We'll be back in a moment with John Rhodes, your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. You know, John, we're working on some shows for the Sci-Fi Network in terms of news content shows. You and this subject matter would be fantastic. And if things go as planned, we'll get a hold of you on this, okay?
Okay, very good. I'd love that.
Let's move on to some callers now because it's filling up fast. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Gary in San Antonio.
Hey,
Gary. To speak with you.
Thank you.
I'd like to share a couple of thoughts with you and your listening audience I believe you'll find interesting.
Okay.
The first is about cattle mutilation. Several years ago, I came across a map of the United States showing the locations of mutilated cattle. All, underline all of them, are clustered in groups, either downwind or downstream, of nuclear missile silos, nuclear bases, nuclear power plants, storage and waste disposal sites.
Interesting.
Well, you know, unlike you, George, I don't believe in coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
Cattle and humans are very similar in their blood and their organs, so I don't think it's much of a stretch of the imagination to consider that the Department of Energy may be harvesting cattle to examine them for the residual effects of radiation and using planted alien stories as cover for their black ops.
What do you think of that, John?
Well, that's entirely possible. That might even just be one of many reasons it might be going on. You know, sometimes certain things that take place suit several purposes and several reasons. And I think that he very well might be right on track. It gets back to this thing about the environment. This particular mutilation happened actually upwind from the nearby nuclear missile silo, which is still manned, but they believe that the missiles have been removed. Maybe it's a switching station or something, but we have to remember also that nuclear missile silos are perfectly suited for opening up hatches and having circular things go in and out of them, including craft. So we can't discount the possibility that some of these activities are taking place from those locations or those points of origin. The upwind, downwind thing, I know that there is organic farming going on upwind of where this most recent cattle mutilation was. I do believe it has to do, obviously, from my perspective and obviously yours, that there's some sort of a connection there with food chain, environment, and maybe even different things to do with genetics. But there's definitely something going on. It gets back to that underlying message. What do you think the message might be?
Personally, I think the message is the Department of Energy is looking for the residual effects of radiation on cattle since they are so close to humans in their blood and organs.
Well,
possible.
When we were out there, Sheriff Kuka took Geiger counter readings and didn't notice anything out of normal specs. So it's probably whatever's happening is probably long term. It gets back to that thing about there's so many areas to speculate on. I do agree, though, that saplings have to be taken from the natural environment in regards to where farming is occurring and also different types of disposal areas that there are. So, yes, there's a very good valid point that the caller's making.
George, may I share one other thought?
Sure, Gary.
I've been trying to get a hold of you since your JFK assassination broadcast. Here's something most people don't know. If you look on an aerial map of the exact location of JFK's assassination, he was shot at the apex, at the top of four intersecting streets that form an unfinished pyramid.
That's
bizarre. You know, like in the back of your dollar bill.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of order chaos, out of chaos order. Novus Ordo.
Well, yeah, that's exactly, you know, that fits even in with what we're talking about with mutilations and even the reptoid activity. There's always these nods and these winks going on. I mean, it's, haven't you noticed that that's quite apparent in most of this activity, that it's almost like a tauntingness, like we're not supposed to see this, but, you know, it's like, why shoot him where all the apexes come together?
Would you go on an expedition, John, for the reptoids?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I've spent untold, endless amount of days climbing mountains and looking for locations of where these things have been reported. And if I saw one, and I've even told news crews this before, if I knew where they existed, could be found, I'm not sure that I would be so quick to suddenly blurt it out, because, you know, when that Bishopville, South Carolina case took place back in 1988, that town down there was flooded with people from all over the place, many of which were packing shotguns and wanting to take hounds into the swamps and shoot this thing because, you know, there's no good beast better than a dead beast, and that's the way some people think. So, you know, that gets back to that whole thing about the responsibility of informing people as to this current status and the truth of it. My good friend John Lear says the same thing. You know, can we handle it? I mean, we might say we can, but we represent a very small fraction of people that are in this nation that believe in what we believe in, but they don't want to spend the time thinking about it more than just beyond science fiction in the movie theater.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Hey, George, this is Tom from Pueblo, Colorado.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
You know, I was just curious. I live in southern Colorado here, and I was listening to your stories about the mutilations or so-called mutilations up there in Montana. What other sort of mutilations have you studied from, you know, around the U.S., and how do they differ from the ones in Montana?
A lot of the mutilations are very similar to each other. There's obviously a certain set of organs that are always taken. You know, there seems to always be tissue from the eye or liquid fluids from the eye. There's cheekbone taken. There's sometimes nostril incisions. There's the udder that's gone, the anus that's cored out. Different things like this, including different types of slashings. It really does run the gamut. And southern Colorado out there, especially towards the Four Corners area, which gets into the direction of a lot of anomalous activity, a very high concentration of UFO and anomalous phenomenon happening in the Four Corners area here in the United States. It's just unimaginable to think of all of this going on, and after almost 60 years of it, we haven't been able to quite wrap our heads around it and find out what's going on.
Do you think, John, that you brought it up, Mothman might have been a reptoid?
Possibility. We're talking about when people looked up and saw what they saw. They saw a figure flying in the air that seemed to have its eyes, glowing red eyes, lower than its shoulders. And I believe that this could very well have been a levitating humanoid or somebody that had some sort of levitation device or something like a Draco that could have been suspended in the air and hooked its head down low as if to observe something on the ground, but from a viewpoint from the ground upwards, the lowered head would appear with the reflecting eyes, like cat's eyes sometimes reflect, that the eyes are actually in the chest. Now, that doesn't even fit the parameter of most animals that we know of. But when you think of how something could be flying and it could be looking down with its outstretched neck like that, how it might be seen as being something like that. It definitely was around during a period of where there was going to be a lot of psychic trauma going on just later with the accident on the bridge. So there's some sort of maybe, how do we know that being in the Mothman prophecies wasn't actually trying to warn us of an event that was about to take place, like try and scare us away or get our attention to it? You know, we can't.
Well, that's always possible.
Yeah, we can't always think that these things are the orchestrators of this. Maybe sometimes they show themselves or do things in order to help us, but we're just always looking the other way.
Next up, west of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Mike. I'm driving a truck right now in Warsaw, Indiana. I had a quick question for John. Do you feel that dogs, like domestic pets, do you think that they are a result of genetic engineering, or do you think that it's breeding that's created all these different kinds of dogs that we have, breeds of dogs? It's kind of hard to believe that, you know, that they crossbred all these dogs to create all these different kinds of dogs that we have. What do you think?
We know that even in modern history have crossbred dogs for new breeds and such like that. But I think just recently they found out that the eve of all dogs, or I guess you could say the root of a lot of dogs, end up going back to China. Isn't that George a number of years ago? They made that report talking
yes.
about that. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I do know that the only dog I've seen that are so unusual that would make me question as to whether some sort of manipulation is going on, even with dogs, the canines, is that there was a dog associated with the Aztecs down in Mexico. And to this very day, I can't even figure out how to wrap my tongue around its name. It's one of those really difficult names to say in the Mexican language.
It's not the Shar-Pei, right?
No, it's not. It's called the Cutsacuplitle or something like that. This dog is so unusual. It has no fur. Okay, it sweats, and it actually cries. When it gets upset, tears, it will have tears. Now, that is a very unusual animal, especially to have come from an area so rich in history, like with Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, being man or whatever that showed up down in Mexico to give all this knowledge of all these different things to the ancient Aztecs and actually lift them out of the bloodshed that they were in into a religion of more of one of peace and love. But I don't know. I'm sometimes at a loss with all that stuff.
And you say this dog was from the Aztecs in those days?
Yeah, it was attributed to the Aztecs, but see, the Aztecs, we still have to remember what's going on in Mexico City.
These All right, are how about this? Is this it? X-O-L-O-I-T-C-U-I-N-T-L-I.
Go ahead, give it a shot, George.
Man, I'm not even going to guess. I'm going to see
yes,
if this is it.
Yes, that's the
though.
Dog.
That is,
now that you've had it spelled out there, everybody can hit the internet and go look at the dog. They'll say, that's an unusual dog.
Yep, for sure.
So anyway, just in closing that off, remember the Mayans, we don't know their origins, the original Mayans. They had high degrees of technology. They may have been Atlantean descendants who arrived in Central America, and they could be looking for something to return home to pull them off this planet before things get out of hand. So when you attribute a dog like that to that region of the world where even aliens to this day show themselves en masse, you have to wonder, I wonder what was going on in those caverns underground.
Good point. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you doing? And John,
good.
How are you?
Thank you.
Hi, fine. Thanks.
Great. I've actually got some information about the mutilations and then a couple of comments or questions.
Sure. Go ahead.
First off, I think when I was about 18 or so, I'm thinking that's around 1973 or so, I don't remember exactly, but it was about the first time I heard of these mutilations and stuff, okay? And I remember watching a show on TV where they had found some of these cows that were dead and mutilated, and what they did is they couldn't figure it out, and they were wondering whether it was natural causes or not. So what they did was they actually killed a cow, laid it out on the side, and actually put a camera up, and they video camera'd the thing. They were taking photographs. They took a video of the thing, and like the camera was hidden, and they were away. So, like, they weren't there, so any predators could come around if they wanted to. But
right.
What it is I saw the actual video, and you can see where the animal starts to bloat up. And
yeah,
it
excessive
very quickly.
Yes, excessive bloating immediately.
Well, just a moment. They said the bloating starts up, and
right.
then the the through the anus comes most of the organs and stuff. They actually extend way out, and they go, and then they start to shrink back in, but they're being eaten away. Okay? And then they actually, later on, when they did, is actually they cut it open, and they said, yeah, this thing, it was just this, but it looks like it was surgically removed, because it's right back to the, you know, like the beginning of the anus, like looks like it's right from there on up, they've taken it all out. Okay? And same thing with some of the, some cuts and stuff, and on the side of the face where they had, on the lower side where it was touching the ground, you had a similar action happening. Now, I'm not sure if that sort of solves all of them or not. There's probably some that aren't. But I'm just wondering, like when I actually saw this video, I saw it on twice. Now, since then, I've never ever seen it on TV again. We've heard about mutilations, you know, a zillion times since then. But my sort of questions on the same side were, when you were saying the face was removed, like, was that the downside?
No, it's actually the upper part and the lower part, all the way back to the termination point where the ear is almost.
Okay, well, you see,
it was about 4 inches up from the bottom part of the molar to the top area incised line, and then from the bottom jaw, from the top of the molar down, it was about 3 inches, and it actually curled over and took out one of the nostrils.
Oh, okay. Well, you see, the thing is, these bacteria and stuff, they basically go in the mucous membranes and from all ends, like, the, you know, at the front and the,
right.
You know, from the scrotum and stuff, they go in there because of that reason and into the nose because of that reason and maybe into the mouth because of the reason. I don't know about that end. But they showed this whole work, and then they were also talking about gashes and stuff that were on the top. They said those didn't have the same action because they weren't subject to be sitting on the ground where they're moist, and also the insects and flies came and actually sort of ate and cleaned that area sort of thing. Okay, so they didn't have the same problems with the stuff on the top. So that may explain why that cow that you're saying was cut open on top wasn't taken. Okay? And I had a quick comment on the depressions. I'm just wondering, I don't know the details, you know, but could the sick animal, whatever, have fallen, made a depression, and then staggered a little farther and fallen for good then?
No, actually, because what would happen is when it pulled itself upright, you would see a staggering motion where feet would be dragging along the ground, or at least a hoof dragging along the ground, at least for a certain period before it collapsed again. And that's not what it looked like. There wasn't a whole bunch of dirt that had been piled up underneath a foot, like a foot had moved forward and then collapsed down on top of it. It does look very deliberately like its head was pointed towards, I remember, the south-southeast, and or the north-northeast, and the animal, when it was laid out, there was stubble around it that was still standing upright. Now, you got to remember, I got there about 5 weeks afterwards, but because of the cow actions around the Valier cow number 62, because of the cows coming around there, and then the some students from Bozeman came out with Montana State University, filmed some of this stuff, and the sheriff had been already out there. So the crime scene had started to already deteriorate, but it certainly did look like they had placed it right next to that fence. It always gets back to that thing, is it's right next to the fence, you know, and why. You've got almost 600 acres out there into which to deposit something, but it's not. It's right next to the fence.
We'll be back with final questions with our guest, the crypto hunter, John Rhodes, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, it'll be our Friday into Saturday night open lines, so get ready for that. Also, Saturday night, I will be Ian Punnett's guest for his first hour, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time. He wants to talk about the book Worker in the Light, and he said, George, I've been chasing to get you on the program for a long time. So I said, all right, Ian, we'll do it. So I'll be his guest Saturday night, first hour, on the Ian Punnett Live Coast to Coast program. Okay, welcome back. This is our final segment with our special guest, John Rhodes, also known as the Crypto Hunter. How did you get that title, John?
Well, I just kind of kept thinking about all the things that I had been researching, and the only thing that I could ever think of was that I just hunt down hidden mysteries. It is because when you start to look into one area of the phenomena that we're engaged in today's culture, then it draws you into other areas. So the blanket thing was looking for anything hidden. And, of course, this gets into the aspect of looking for other beings that are extensions of Earth life forms and gets into cryptozoology. And so, therefore, I'm a hunter of mysteries and a hunter of different kinds of wild animals as well as the ones that are sentient and that might take you for a ride on their flying saucer if given a chance.
Back to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, it's Barbie from the Fantastic Forum. I'm in Los Angeles.
Hey, Barbie, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Nice to hear you and John tonight.
Thanks. Oh,
thank you very much.
Listen, last summer, and I don't recall the date, but I can tell you it was the last Wednesday in August 2005, I think I grabbed a reptilian in my bedroom.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, well, tell us what happened.
All right. I'm very light sensitive, and I had just shut off the TV. My kitten, Calvin, who is all white, was lying at the foot of the bed. I had just turned over and shut my eyes. And you know how it is if your computer comes on in the middle of the night and it automatically wakes you up?
Right.
Have you ever had that happen? Well,
yes.
Only I wasn't asleep yet. I had just closed my eyes. And I thought the computer, somebody had hit the computer mouse and turned it on. And the whole room was filled with this strange green light that was coming in through the Venetian blinds that were about two-thirds shut. And I thought, now, well, this is really strange because I'm looking at my cat and his ears are glowing red. And he's looking at something that's behind my head. Well, I tried to turn my head and I suddenly realized I couldn't move. And Howard was laying 6 inches from me, and I was going to reach over and nudge him and say, wake up, there's something in the room. You're a non-believer, now you're going to believe this. And I couldn't reach him because it was like there's a force field between his arm and my arm. And I turned my eyes as far up towards the head of the bed as I could, and I could see in color some appendage. Now, I don't know if it was an arm or a leg, but there was a being standing behind my pillow next to the wall, and I could see through him. And it was like he was in camouflage colors, but it was not a uniform. It was like the whole appendage was in camouflage colors, but I could see through it. And I thought, all right, if I can't reach to Howard, maybe I can reach to you. And as my mind thought that, I grabbed forward, and I could move my arm forward, but just not side to side. And I got a hold of whatever it was, and it slithered out of my hand very quickly and leaped way back out of my reach. And it felt like one of those blue ice packs that you buy at the store and you put in your ice chest, but it felt like how that feels when it's thawed out. It's not wet on the outside, but it's squishy kind of. Anyway, I'm thinking to myself, don't go anywhere. I have questions for you. I want to ask you something. And all of a sudden, I could feel like a vibration. Now, it was not painful or anything like that, but it started at my crown chakra, and it went all the way down through my body. And I thought, well, if he thinks he's punishing me, he's out of luck because this feels good. And then it stopped, you know. He stopped, and I said, come on now, don't go, don't go. And if you're going to go, take me with you for a little while because I've got questions I want to ask you. And all of a sudden, he was just nowhere to be found, and the light in the room changed back to the normal light of the street lamp coming through the blinds, and it wasn't green anymore. And I'm laying there, and I'm thinking, well, bull crap, you know. He got away. But my cat, my poor cat, went into a frenzy, and he bounced off every piece of furniture and all the walls in the house for the next half hour.
Typical guy, Barb. You got serious. He ran away.
I guess. But, you know, that was, it was just such a strange experience. I had a similar experience, but I didn't see anything when I was in Laughlin 2 years ago at the IUFOC, the UFO Congress.
Right.
I had the same kind of vibration come into my perfectly dark room one night, and it was the same kind of vibration that went all down through my body, and I had the same thought, oh, this feels good. Now, if you want to sit and talk, I'm ready. Just let me sit up, and I'll talk to you person to whatever you are. And all of a sudden, it stopped, and the thought that was left in my head was, sorry, wrong room.
Wow.
Sort of sounds like Pamela Stonebrook, John. Have you heard of her?
Yes, I have. You know, there seems to be just, I guess what we're looking at here is a situation in which there have been certain beings, reptilian humanoids, that have appeared to people that have an emotional attachment to that particular individual. And sometimes it's perceived as sexual, but it's not, because it's, like I said, it has something to do with energies more than just a physical act, because I think we're talking about the beings that are sometimes physical and sometimes non-physical, so there's a matter of vibration happening. But the thing was, as you were saying, that you could, like, see through him. Now, there's another case that we've heard, and it's on the Internet, actually. The individual has shared it, in which there was a reptoid at the end of his bed, and he tried to think of what to do, or even if it were real, and he picked up an object that was next to the bed and threw it, and it went through the reptoid.
Hmm.
So that reptoid was half physical, partly not.
Half-dimensional.
But, yeah, he was phasing in and out and in and out, and he looked somewhat kind of almost bored but slightly amused, touched something on his belt, and completely disappeared. But there does seem to be some sort of, like, relationship thing going on, or just as if maybe you had think of yourself like a person out in the wilds of Africa, and you're a warden over a certain area, and you have certain animals that you've interacted with before. You tag them, they go down, they're kind of phased out. You do things to them and such like that. Now, you disappear, that animal's going to be in shock, but it doesn't mean that you didn't like it. I mean, it didn't like you. There could be something going on that's really kind of cool, but everybody's in a state of shock. You're lucky enough to have been lucid enough to actually engage. And I've seen this over time and time again. When you're dealing with these guys, they respect willpower, and they respect. And as long as you're respectful towards them and don't give them an inch, in other words, don't let them see you're afraid or anything like that, because sometimes they'll react to fear thinking that they're about to be attacked, because, you know, it's the same organ in the brain that perceives this flight or fight, and you could be sending out signals of your brain that he's sensitive to, where he's not sure which one it is, and he might just, you know, attack you back because out of a sense of self-preservation. So you just have to, you know, be cool with them, and they will be cool with you, and just try and hold the demons inside your own dreams away at that point.
Hey, John, what if we had a nuclear war a long time ago and the reptoids were merely humans that have mutated?
Oh, wow. Well, that would make an interesting movie, see?
It sure would.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's evidence all over the world that there has been some sort of high heat that could only be generated by some sort of thermonuclear blast on the surface. I know that in New Mexico, there's an area so much like that in which glasses actually fuse together. So, who knows how far this goes back. It might be going back to those wars in the Mahabharata, where they saw these guys flying around in the clouds and having big battles and stuff.
Yeah, something happened. Let's go to our wild card line. Thanks for holding. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, hi, John. Hi, George.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. Hey, some interesting theories coming from some of your callers, but the one that I was thinking of was your interview with Linda Moulton Howe the other night. Yeah, I don't think you discussed it with John in reference to the water tank and the mutilated cows that they found inside the water tank.
We didn't bring up that portion of it, but we did talk about the case in Montana.
Right, and I am aware that animals have been left at a height before, and so we know that they're being dropped from heights. It's just a matter of, you know, God, in a water tank, you'd think, are they contaminating the water? Aren't they even concerned about that?
Yeah, how do they get in? And then the plasma beams, the people won't come forward and actually openly say that they saw, other than to Linda Moulton Howe, the plasma beam carry.
There are a lot of ranchers, and these are just down-to-earth, ordinary people that are just good American, hardworking American men and women. And they that have had these things occur on their ranches, many of them say they have given in to the fact that they know that this is being done by something that may be extraterrestrial or even interterrestrial. So, you know, you've got a degree of people that are always going to be in denial, but the battle, if you wanted to go to a place to see a UFO in the United States, mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, that Golden Triangle area in there where those mutilations are happening right now, we've had these occur. It happens in clusters between 3 or 4 years, sometimes as many as 67 of them. If anybody wanted to spend a vacation, come to that beautiful, beautiful area up there of like Valier or De Poirier or anything like that, and stay at one of those inns, enjoy the scenery around there, and you're going to engage in talking to people. You know, many people that actually feel the same way and have been on the front lines, they're not people that are going to turn around and say, I think you're wacko. You've got a large group of people down there that are really supportive of it. So why not go to an area like that? If enough cameras hung out, maybe we will actually start getting videotape footage. I don't think those guys from the missile silo down the road from where this animal was deposited are going to share their surveillance camera footage from that evening with Sheriff or myself or anybody else. I would be very surprised if they did, because, you know, those are sensitive facilities. There's got to be surveillance cameras around there pointed outwards, and I know, as close as that is, there's got to be something on video, but we will never see it.
I agree. All right. Well, fascinating show, guys. I'll be listening later. I got to go. I got a delivery to make out here at Fresno.
Well, thanks
right,
for calling. Fresno is a great place up near there with Mariposa. There's been reptoid sightings up there as well.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on with John Rhodes on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, sir.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. I had a call pertaining to a gentleman that had called in earlier about the Mexican hairless dogs.
Right.
Yes.
And the pronunciation of that is called esquinkly.
Esquinkly.
Esquinkly. And,
esquinkly.
Yes. They are. I loved animals, but these are ugly dogs.
they basically look like hairless bull terriers.
Chupacabras. They look like chupacabras.
Well, basically, yes. But they are known, and from what I've learned probably since back in the time of the Aztecs, I don't know if it's because they have no hair, but they are known for having medicinal abilities, and they still exist in certain towns in Mexico, and I have seen them myself, and they exist because, that's not why they exist, but they people use them for arthritis remedies. They put them on their legs.
They eat. Well, they eat them or what?
No, they
sweat.
I think because they have no hair, they let them rest up against their legs or wherever part of their body has wherever they're suffering from arthritis. And many people swear by the fact that I don't know if it's because they have no hair, but they take the arthritis away and they help them out. But yeah, these dogs have been they're documented in the Mexican Museum of Anthropology and for, like I said, since the time of the Aztecs.
Yeah.
And
Well, I've actually seen one of these dogs. I
have
came
too.
Across it. Oh, they're fascinating. I mean, just really, really strange to look at.
There's only 7,000 in North America, apparently.
Wow.
That's not a lot.
Wow. And, yeah. They're very strange. And if you think of the chupacabras, I wonder if you could sit down and befriend a chupacabra to the point of playing fetch with it.
I'll keep my yellow lab over this thing. This is, I mean, I looked at the picture during the break. I mean, that is one strange looking critter. His ears are bigger than Spock's. West of the Rockies, you're on with John Rhodes. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi. Hello. Are you picking me up? This is Larry from Yakima, Washington.
Picking you up, Larry.
Oh, great. Hey, how you doing? My question is, it might be a little off left field, but I have a photograph of a woman and videotape of a woman holding a baby, and they're floating in the air. with white light all around them. And it's an experience that started here in Yakima in September 2003. And I've documented over 100 photographs and a ton of video for it.
Have you sent us any of this, Larry?
Well, no.
Larry.
I'm not supposed to talk about who I am. And I'm only supposed to introduce the website and launch it.
No, we can't do that unless you tell us who you are. So that's not going to work. Oh, well. Someone tried to leak in a freebie on us, John.
Hey, you know what? You got to give him credit for the try.
Yep. But we caught him.
Right.
I can't tell you who I am, but I'll give you my website. No, not going to happen. Millions of people pick up on that thing. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hey, George, this is Adam from Akron. I'm the one that called a couple months back and told you I had the marbles in my head.
Yes.
Okay, I got two quick questions. I know we're short on time. First of all, I want to know what's the farthest that our guest has gone in his search for the cryptozoology. And second, I want to know what your favorite cryptozoological creature is, because I want to make you a drawing for a Christmas present.
You've got to be kidding me.
That's great. How far have I gone? Well, I've entered tunnel systems and caves and gone into areas which would otherwise I would not have gone. Plenty of times I've gone up into the mountains and I've heard things and that have absolutely scared the dickens out of me. Luckily, I have yet to come across one face-to-face. The favorite cryptozoological discovery, I guess, would have to be the Flores people of the islands off of Java, that they discovered that were human, but at the same time they were so small they resembled like the little people that were on the Egyptians' legs, remember?
Yes.
Where they have the little people. I mean, you have to wonder if they were back then. So sometimes I think it's going to be one of those little men that would probably be the most fascinating, because they were discovered to be real. There's all these arguments, but it enlarged everybody's imagination out there, and it really served its purpose.
John Rhodes, thank you so much. Your website, reptoids.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Good luck with the information and the DVD.
Thank you very much. And look
John
forward
Rhodes.
To speaking with you again.
Absolutely. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Wayne Roberts, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.